It's 8 o'clock. This is KVNF Regional News for Thursday, June 25th. I'm Patricia Naft. The Montrose School District recently approved its budget for next year. The most notable feature, perhaps, is the $1.4 million deficit. Interim District Superintendent Kirk Henwood said that it started 3 years ago.
We built up some reserves, so the decision was made at that time that we would spend down some of those reserves because our employees had not received raises for 3 years, I believe. When you give somebody a raise, that's an ongoing expense year to year, but our reserves are essentially a savings account, and once it's spent out, it's spent out.
The reason they went ahead with that plan was threefold. The district expected more money from the legislature that didn't happen. They also expected an increase in the amount of money they received per pupil. That didn't happen. They also were looking at declining enrollment and thought that it would level out. That didn't happen.
It was a conscious decision. It's not like we didn't know what we were doing. It was a conscious decision, and things just didn't work out as we had planned.
So the district has been on a hiring freeze in hopes that by not replacing staff and perhaps reducing their school's footprint, they'll be able to save the money necessary to avoid cutting staff. State Senator Ellen Roberts, whose 6th district stretches from Montezuma to Montrose counties, recently announced that she will not be challenging U.S. Senator Bennett in 2016. To discuss her decision, KVNF's Jake Ryan talked with Peter Marcus, a reporter for the Durango Herald, who's been following Roberts' possible challenge.
Ellen Roberts had been considering challenging Bennett for the 2016 election. Why is she backing out?
Senator Roberts always acknowledged that she was going to be facing a pretty uphill challenge with this thing. Michael Bennett is pretty darn good at raising money. He raised $2 million in just the first quarter of the year. And so Senator Roberts was going to have to do some massive, massive fundraising. It was going to be a full-time job, and it was going to be very stressful. And she basically just decided that, you know, she's got her district, and she's got her constituents, and she's focused on her legislative work. So it was just going to be a huge time crunch for her to really be raising this money, put her out in the spotlight. Obviously, that would have opened her up to attacks. It already has opened her up to plenty of attacks. And so I think that she just really felt like she wanted to focus on her district and on her legislative work and just not take on that sort of monumental challenge.
Who is left, I guess, as viable challengers to Bennett next year?
Great question, one that everyone's trying to figure out. Senate President Bill Cadman has been eyed as a viable candidate, but he has given no indication that he's even interested in that. As you said, with other high-profile candidates like Mike Kaufman and then his wife Cynthia Kaufman saying that they're not interested, the bench is it's not great. John Caldera with the Independent Institute had a great comment. He said, Republican bench, we don't even have a folding chair. So that's kind of what they're going to be facing. The million-dollar question is, who is the viable candidate that steps up? And so far, there really has been no one that's been identified.
That was Peter Marcus with the Durango Herald talking with KVNF's Jake Ryan. The search for a new city manager for Delta has been restarted. After narrowing down the field of applicants to just 3, Delta Mayor Ed Sisson said it just didn't work out.
By the time we finished, it just didn't feel right with everybody because staff interviewed them and the council interviewed them, and it just, the 3 gentlemen that we had, just we offered one the position, one from Glenwood, and he turned us down.
Now they're looking at some different candidates.
We were hoping to have a list of 7. We called all these gentlemen, and 4 have already taken positions elsewhere, so we get down to 3.
The 3 current candidates are Mark Collins, Associate Vice President at the University of Wyoming, Ken Weaver, a private consultant out of Nebraska, and Sid Fleming, the city manager of Yuma, Colorado. Last week, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, ruled that the Delta Montrose Electric Association is obligated to purchase locally produced power from qualifying facilities. Previously, DMEA could only buy 5% of its energy from providers other than Tri-State, a wholesale power supplier in four states. KVNF's Laura Pomisano spoke with Jonathan Holodick, a senior policy advocate for the Center for Rural Affairs, about the decision. The center is an advocacy group focused on agriculture, energy, and health issues.
What do you think the implications of the FERC decision will be?
Well, it's hard to tell right now, but this could end up being a very big deal. I think we often hear about small energy projects failing to find a purchaser. And when your local utility declines to purchase that energy, they often point to larger all requirements contracts they have with a wholesale provider. And this decision says that they still have to buy it. They can't say no, and they can't point to those contracts as a reason.
DMEA considers the FERC ruling a victory. What do you think it means for Tri-State?
This could be problematic for Tri-State. I think they invest so much on large baseload power, such as coal-fired generation, and they really haven't responded to the customer owners who have said time and time again that they're interested in cleaner energy and they're interested in more localized projects. This says that Tri-State has to recognize that and has to respond. It's early, and it's hard to see which smaller rural electric cooperatives will take advantage of this. Even looking at the FERC decision, you saw a lot of smaller rural electric cooperatives intervening on the side of Tri-State.
Tri-State is just one wholesale power supplier. How will this decision affect other companies that provide a similar service to electric cooperatives?
Well, there are so many in the area, and each state and each region has their own. I think that for us, the bigger concern is which rural electric cooperatives are going to take advantage of this. These are the people that we buy our electricity straight from. So Tri-State will sell to DMEA, and DMEA will sell to us, and it'll go through a chain. The conversation we need to focus on having is between ourselves and DMEA, and ourselves and the individuals that we elected to serve on the board of DMEA, because that's where the change happened. We had some very progressive and forward-thinking and community-oriented board members who were willing to recognize that when Tri-State said this wasn't going to work, that Tri-State was wrong, and that the law was on the side of DMEA, and they pushed it through. Which other utilities are going to do that? I think that's going to be the exciting part, is finding out.
That was Jonathan Holodick, a senior policy advocate for the Center for Rural Affairs, speaking to KVNF's Laura Pomisano. A representative for Tri-State declined to interview, but in a written statement said that they are reviewing the ruling as well as their policy regarding member generation. Stay tuned for The Sweet Sound with Lily. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.